Shit, 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 Sam.
What the fuck is your problem?
Shut up, you freak!
Thanks, I needed that.
Welcome to the real world.
Don't be too proud of this technological terror you've constructed.
You are the leading asshole in the state.
Bitch, please.
Pass the duchy, my friends.
Remember, a Jedi can feel the Force flowing through him.
What were you doing when the lights went out?
Lynch me for what my people have done to your people.
Fabulous!
It's a madhouse! A madhouse!
Warning, if you want your asses blown out, stay in the room.
Hello, and welcome to Dave and Shecky's Groovy Boob Tube Review. I am Dave.
And I'm Shecky, and in our podcast, we actually just review shit that's already on television, and then you can decide whether or not it's worth the effort to pick up the remote and actually watch that show, or movie, or anything, really. And this week, we've decided to review...
Crash.
Okay, so your first thoughts on Crash, as soon as the movie started, what did you think?
Well, I was under the impression that this was actually going to be a good movie. I was thinking it was going to be heavy. I mean, I was just like, all right, this is a heavy thing here, you know. And then, slowly but surely, it started appearing to be what it really was.
Which was? Crap?
Crash sandwich, basically. It was a shit sandwich.
And I must say... right after you said shit sandwich, that I kind of tried to dissuade us from picking this movie. You kept on saying Crash, and why was that? Why did you want to pick Crash?
I wanted to see Matt Dillon as an ass. He's always a good ass. Matt Dillon, you know, that was my... I figured a racist Matt Dillon would be entertaining. And who can pass up a good Don Cheadle?
Well, yeah, but I thought you had wanted to pick it because you had been in the room when Oprah had been doing she did like a whole show on Crash. She had all the cast out there, and usually Oprah, I adore Oprah, and when she has something to say, I will listen to it. And you happened to be in the room that day.
I was. I watched it. Oprah made it seem like it was better than it was. I hate to tell you. I mean, this is no Color Purple.
No.
This is color brown.
Is that the shit sandwich color?
This is a multicolored brown sandwich.
It started off right away. There's like this, it's like this heavy quote, supposedly, from Don Cheadle.
It's the sense of touch.
What?
Any real city, you walk... you know, you brush past people, people bump into you. In L.A., nobody touches you. We're always behind this metal and glass. I think we miss that touch so much that we crash into each other just so we can feel something.
Okay, so that's what the whole movie is based on, this first quote by Don Cheadle. And you're kind of like, okay, that's... See, the thing is with me, with dialogue in movies, is that there's like a fine line between real dialogue of what people would really say and stuff that's like a little over-dramatized, and then that shit that people would just never fucking say.
If I could quote Max Weinberg, yes.
But there's just a lot of this kind of dialogue... like that opening scene, I know that was supposed to be like all serious and, you know, supposed to set up this really heavy movie. But to be honest, like when people were acting racist in the movie, I was fucking giggling.
Yeah, it was cliche 101. It was like really cliched. I'll tell you, Sandra Bullock, really, she's a pretty good actress because I don't think she's an ass in real life, but she played a really good ass. I mean, she's not an ass, but
like a bitch, a racist
bitch.
Like a
real ass, basically. She was an asshole. And it came across, I mean, who would want to, you wouldn't want to spend a moment with that person. And she portrayed that well, so I definitely think she was good.
I think that was good acting.
But the things she was saying were so ridiculous that I almost had to laugh.
Oh, I did. They were fucking... Like, here's a good Sandra Bullock moment.
I would like the locks changed again in the morning. And you know what? You might mention that we'd appreciate it if next time they didn't send a gang member.
A gang member?
Yes, yes.
Well, you mean that kid in there?
Yes, the guy in there with the shaved head, the pants around his ass, the prison tattoo.
Those are not prison tattoos.
Oh, really? And he's not going to go sell our key to one of his gangbanger friends the moment he is out our door.
We've had a really tough night. I think it'd be best if you just went upstairs right
now.
And
what, wait for them to break in? I just had a gun pointed in my face.
You lower your voice.
And it was my fault because I knew it was going to happen. But if a white person sees two black men walking towards her and she turns and walks in the other direction, she's a racist, right? Well, I got scared and I didn't say anything. And 10 seconds later, I had a gun in my face. Now, I am telling you, your amigo in there is going to sell our key to one of his homies. And this time it'd be really fucking great if you acted like you actually gave a shit.
And it's, I mean, it's funny because I do think she acted really well in this movie. I think she did a great job. But it was just, it made me laugh. Some of the racism was just really funny.
Yeah, it was like a, it was basically like a glorified after school movie. It had like really cliched references and Don Cheadle, his character saying certain things I didn't think were true to his character. Let's just put it that way. I like the guy who was the Arab or the Persian guy. He was like a Persian Larry David. That was good. Kevin, he couldn't get along with anyone. He was just misinterpreting everything, and that was, who fixed the lock? That was excellent. I like that.
Yeah, well, I had the problems with that guy. Well, there's a few problems with that guy. Farhad, I think his name is. He, first of all, he couldn't speak any English, or his English was really bad, but he couldn't read English, yet he read English good enough to go through the yellow, or the white pages to find where the poor Puerto Rican guy lived.
Ah.
So it's just like... It's like, my English isn't so great, but I'm going to track this poor Spanish guy. And the Puerto Rican guy, I mean, out of everybody in the movie, he's the only one I really just felt bad for.
Yeah, I hear that. The whitish black couple, they were kind of overly white or something. I mean, that was just, this is a far cry from a Spike Lee movie. And you may not like Spike Lee, but, you know, Do the Right Thing is a lot heavier than... Crash.
Yeah, it was. I really felt like, and you had a really good comment after it was over, and I said, what'd you think? And you said, do you remember what you said?
Yes, this is perhaps the, I'm saying, this is the best worst movie ever. This is the greatest horrible movie. That's what it was.
Exactly.
The greatest horrible. Sometimes I have to go into the Indian reference there to bring back my mind. It's like a computer. I've been programmed by an Indian.
You've been programmed by the birdie num-num.
It's the only,
But it's. I kind of felt the same way. And a lot of times we disagree on movies completely, but I just couldn't, like, I couldn't sit there and say, oh, this movie was really heavy and really deep. And it's almost felt like it was almost too trying to be politically correct or something. And I don't know. It was almost like the message was just getting beaten over my head. And I already know that there's racism. And, you know, back in the day when Don Rickles was doing his comedy act in Vegas or on whatever variety show, that motherfucker was racist, but the shit was funny. And I think everybody was laughing. And now it's just like you can't even say something that's mildly, like, funny and racial because you're, like, you're labeled as being, like, evil or something.
The scenarios they set up in this were so ridiculous. I mean... over the top. Do people really exist like that? Does a white woman really start going on a rampage like that at night after she's been carjacked in front of black and Spanish people? Does she really go on that kind of a rampage? What kind of person is really like that? I mean, I can't even imagine. Sometimes people just, are they even the same species as me? What the hell is going on with this world?
Well, it's like the guy who wrote it, Paul Haggis, he did everything. He wrote it and he directed.
He's fucking eating too much haggis. He's got the mad cow.
Is haggis from cow?
Well, over there in Scotland, you never know what it is.
Is that true? I haven't had many adventures in Scotland, so I don't know. But
me neither.
I know. But the thing was with this was that A, it took place in like L.A., right? It was in Los Angeles.
That's
this
right.
Huge, fucking, sprawling city.
Oh yeah, and the initial quote where they say that no one touches anyone in New York because you know you always drive everywhere. Well, if you don't touch anyone, how did everyone interact every 2 seconds in this movie?
It's not New York. It's L.A.
Yeah,
though.
That's what I mean. L.A. That too, for God's sake. Jeez.
It's like, it's kind of true that everyone drives around in L.A. and in New York, everybody more or less walks around. But it's, again, that opening quote is just a little too, it's just shit. Sometimes shit tries too hard.
That's true. This one definitely tried too hard with the wrong motion.
But as bad as I thought it was, there was really good acting.
Yeah, it kept getting good, and then it kept getting really bad.
It got cheesy at some point.
It was a really good, bad movie. It wasn't a bad, good movie. It was a good, bad movie.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it was a bad movie, but it was good at points.
Well, I think it's good because the acting was really good.
Ludacris was pretty good, I think.
Fucking Tony Danza. We've got one of the Tony Danza quotes.
Probably the best Tony Danza ever since Taxi.
Well, here's a clip.
Great cameo.
Cap, you got a second?
Yeah, Fred, I just want to grab some coffee.
Yeah, listen, I think we need another take, buddy.
That looked pretty terrific, man.
This is going to sound strange, but is Jamal seeing a speech coach or something?
What do you mean?
Have you noticed, this is weird for a white guy to say, but have you noticed he's talking a lot less black lately?
No, I haven't noticed that.
Really? Like in this scene? He was supposed to say, don't be talking about that. And he changed it to don't talk to me about that.
Wait a minute. You think because of that, the audience won't recognize him as being a black man? Come on.
Is there a problem, Cam?
Excuse me?
Is there a problem, Cam?
No, we don't have a problem.
I mean, because all I'm saying is it's not his character. Eddie's supposed to be the smart one, not Jamal, right? I mean, you're the expert here, but to me, it rings false.
We're going to do it one more time.
Tony Danza playing a racist, that made me laugh out loud. I mean, that is like, I mean, he was good at it, but you can't see Tony Danza being that way. He's got his own fucking talk show, for Christ's sakes. You can't see him being that.
Well,
way.
He didn't really play an outright racist. He played like a nice guy who didn't want to be a racist. And in that, he was a racist.
Is that what it was? He wasn't like some weird closet Hollywood racist? That guy didn't sound black enough?
Yeah, it was definitely institutionalized racism. But he was just trying to be a nice guy. Nice racist.
Right. And that's the other thing, is just that this movie kind of really tried to make you feel bad for, like, they'd set the people up to be like horrible racist assholes, and then at some point they wanted you to like them anyway,
which brings us to Matt Dillon.
You know, I have a hard time with Matt Dillon. He just is getting really weird for me. The chiclets in Something About Mary, those chiclet teeth, I think they were the turning point for me for Matt Dillon, because I can't ever see him in my
Something
mind.
Something About Mary, exactly. Yeah.
Those chiclets are, they just really...
Well, he's an odd-looking guy. He's kind of creepy. He did play Tex back in the 80s. That movie Tex, you know, I'm surprised he didn't win an Oscar for that one.
Really?
Yeah, Tex. I think they should do a remake of Tex. He could play the father to Tex.
What's Tex about?
Tex. He's this kid. He's misplaced in Texas. He's, you know, his dad's a horse raiser. He raises horses or something. He's away. Tex lives with his brother. Oh, and they get into all kinds of problems with drugs and crazy stuff in the Texas area. Dope deal's gone bad with guns. Tex has to run. Tex runs and seeks his dad. It's a whole thing, man.
So you like Tex?
Oh, Tex is the shit.
On a scale from 1 to 10, you'd give Tex...
Well, I'd only give Tex like a 6 or 7.
Oh, okay.
But you gotta love Matt Dillon for playing Tex, because it was sort of like Over the Edge. If you saw Over the Edge back around 1981, another youth with drug problem movie, that was that's kind of that similar after school special sort of movie vibe.
I don't remember many things. I think Matt Dillon was the guy in was it Little Foxes? Is that Tatum O'Neal and Christy McNichol?
I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
I think they were like fighting over him. Yeah, exactly.
Virgins at summer camp, basically.
That's exactly right. And I think he was the guy they were trying to get with or something.
Yeah, that movie would never get made this nowadays.
Oh my, there are so many movies that wouldn't get made these days. There's the Rex Smith movie that I have called Sooner or Later, where the girl pretends that she's 13 and he's like 19, and she pretends she's 15.
Was it the R. Kelly story?
She pretends she's 15 or something, and they start dating, and it just would never get made because here's a 19-year-old making out with a 13-year-old on the screen. I mean, it was
yeah, that's not happening.
But one of my favorite movies, Sooner or Later, with Rex Smith. Great soundtrack. Anyway, let's get back to Crash because we should really talk about it a little bit more. What best part of the movie for you?
Oh, that's a rough one. There were some good moments, but which one was the best? Well, how about the most absurd moment?
Okay.
The most absurd moment was when Matt Dillon is on top of the woman in the car. And, I mean, that was just absurd. He's about a half an inch from her. I mean, they're like making out. And it was completely stupid and awkward. And at the same time, if you've ever seen Broadway Danny Rose, Woody Allen and Mia Farrow are tied together. And it's a comedy scene, and they're up to each other just like that. And I couldn't help but think of that. And at that point, the whole scene just became a comedy to me.
Well, that's like another thing where I was saying, where they take the characters, make you hate them, and think they're all fucking assholes. And then they somehow want you to, there's the twist that you now will have to like this person. And they did it with just about everybody.
True.
Just about everybody. Like Matt Dillon, you know, he shoves his hand up this woman's dress. He pulls over him and this white guy, Ryan Phillippe, plays the other white cop. The two white cops pull over the black couple, the same black couple where the guy is the guy who Tony Danza's talking to in the clip we just played. I mean, everything is so like Robert Altman integrated, but it seems really outlandish. But they pull him over. And Matt Dillon's a racist. He's an asshole. And he shoves his hands up her dress and, you know, does bad things with his fingers. You didn't just laugh at that.
Not a nice guy.
No, not a nice guy at all. So, he, you know, 40 minutes later in the movie, somehow she's in an accident. We don't really know how that happened. She's in an accident. The car is flipped over, or the truck is flipped over, and he's actually the one saving her life. And other cops pull him out of the truck because they don't want him to be hurt, and he goes back into the truck to get her.
What are we in, Mayberry? What is this, a town of 600? Population, L.A., population 650.
But yeah, exactly. It's ridiculous.
That's too small of a world.
And she recognizes that it's Matt Dillon on top of her, and she has a shit fit, you know, or underneath her, actually.
Who wouldn't?
But it's just ridiculous. And it's like every character, except for the Puerto Rican guy, you kind of always like him, right?
Yeah, he's a good guy, you know, but this movie left everything hanging. Like they imply, I could have sworn he was like a father raising a child without a mother. And then all of a sudden the mother's there. Like,
yeah.
And what's that? That's just I don't like that. And then this movie, she gets into an accident, a car accident. No, out of nowhere. Where did that happen? How did that happen? And the guy, her father, the Uncle Tom husband, does he even know about it? Did they ever resolve that? Is there any resolution?
Exactly. And you see her after the accident in a bathrobe in the bed, like sitting on the bed talking to him on the phone, but they don't talk about the accident. I mean, this shit, the movie all happens within like days.
It's fucking too much. It's far, they spread it out too thin.
And then the other thing that really got
me
was...
Too many characters spread too thin.
That guy, Farhad... He goes over to the locksmith's house, the Puerto Rican locksmith, who somehow, even though he didn't speak English, he was able to find him in the phone book, goes to his house and thinks he's got bullets in his gun, and he shoots a blank at Pete and his little daughter, and the daughter survives. Pete, the Puerto Rican locksmith, grabs her, brings her in the house, and then Farhad is back at his deli or wherever. You don't think that Puerto Rican guy would have called the fucking cops?
Yeah, everything's okay.
I mean, he obviously was able to identify the guy. He had just worked with the guy's lock the day before, or that day, for Christ's sake.
They never even established whether the Puerto Rican guy was responsible for the act of vandalism.
He wasn't, though.
Well, they never made that clear. He could have made a call to one of his homies.
His amigos. Let me just say that that guy was the only... I didn't get that from that movie. I get that he replaced the lock and told the guy, listen, it's not really the lock that's the problem. Your door is fucked up. You need a new door.
Yeah, and then that exact night, that shit happens. Well, that's another small coincidence.
See, you think... I thought he was the only character that was completely... You know, that there had been nothing...
Well, then if that's true and his character is that way, then the movie's flawed for having that happen because it's just too... I think it wouldn't happen the next night. I don't buy it.
No, and you know why I don't think it's him? Because Pete, when the guy shows up at Pete's house, he's so confused as to why the guy's there. There was no look in his eye like, aha, now you know where I live, motherfucker. Yep. It was like he was really like confused as to why this guy was here.
That's true. But that was amateurish the way they established that.
And then the Ryan Felipe character, or however you say his name, you know he's married to Reese Witherspoon, right?
Ryan Felipe.
Did you know he's married to Reese Witherspoon?
I think I heard that.
They make him like he's the good white cop throughout the whole fucking movie. Like he's.
Well, you see, there's the tagline. You think you know who you are, you have no idea.
That's the tagline. That's the official tagline for the movie.
Of course, every character, you have no idea who they really are. Matt Dillon's a good guy, and Ryan Felipe is a bad guy.
Well,
or is he?
Oh, my God. You just did that voice, and your eyes crossed. It was very funny. It was like, well,
sometimes
you gotta.
It's true to the character.
It was like a Peter Falk Jewish thing. There was like a whole thing happening over there. But the Ryan Felipe, I'm going to say Felipe.
Sounds like it.
He's like the good guy throughout him and the Puerto Rican guy. And I think the Puerto Rican guy is the only guy who's good and stays good, and you don't change your mind about him unless you like him more. But the Ryan Felipe character, Officer Tommy Hansen, he is really good up until like the last 5 minutes of the show or 10 minutes of the movie, and then he kills a black guy.
Yeah,
he's like he's at first he's Matt Dillon's police partner. You know, he's his. Is that what they're called? Right, their partner. He's
yes.
in the squad car yes, with Matt Dillon. He sees that Matt Dillon's a racist.
He's offended by Matt.
He's
Dillon.
Offended by Matt Dillon, as we all are. And he's there when Matt Dillon does bad things to the black lady. Who black lady is played by Thandi Newton.
Shaniqua Johnson?
No. The black lady who's that's the lady who's working at the hospital or at the clinic.
I see.
So he's there. So the next day he goes into the office and he says, I don't want to be his partner anymore. He's an offensive guy. He's offensive, he's a racist, I don't want any part of it. And so you think, oh good, a good guy. And then at the end, he shoots a black guy who is not acting in any way suspicious or anything. It's really kind of insane. But the other thing is, this movie says is that we're kind of all racist. And it's just, it's kind of like, no, if we can, we're not all racists. Not everybody is like that.
That's true.
I mean, the very beginning of the movie, there's like an accident with like an Asian woman. Right?
Yeah. Welcome to the beginning of the cliches.
I mean, it's the cliches start really early and they just keep coming. And it's really like, oh, God, we get it. I mean, people have been racist for years.
Can we be just a little bit more, a little wittier, a little bit more intelligent than just the base level of like setting up a scenario with cliched remarks? It's just like movies need to be more thought out and better than that.
Yeah, there needed to be less people.
It's after school special quality.
Yeah, there was just too many people that were racist. I don't know that many people who are like that bad. Do I know people who will tell jokes that are racially motivated or charged? Hell yeah. Like I say, Don Rickles. I should try and find some Don Rickles comedy. I bet I have some. I mean, that shit back in 1968 and 1970, whatever, was hilarious. And yet now it's just like, you know, it's almost against the law. Big Brother is telling us what we can and cannot listen to. There was one more clip that you really you had asked me to pull, and it's the guy from
Invasion.
That guy, yeah, exactly, Invasion. I don't even know what his name is.
His name is.
I don't see him on the list, actually.
Not on the list.
The guy from Invasion. I hate that show,
Lieutenant,
by the way.
Lieutenant Dixon, or was that the
Keith David?
Was that the reverse racist, cliched black chief who'd worked his whole life and didn't want to make waves?
I don't know.
Lieutenant,
I really
Dixon.
I don't think that's that guy.
Damn it.
I really don't. But I'll play his clip now.
Yep.
Fucking black people, huh? What did you just say?
I mean, I know all the sociological reasons why. Per capita, 8 times more black men are incarcerated than white men. Schools are a disgrace. Lack of opportunity. Bias in the judicial system. All that stuff. But still, it's got to get to you. On a gut level, as a black man, they just can't keep their hands out of the cookie jar. Of course, you and I know that's not the truth, but that's the way it always plays, doesn't it?
So, I mean, it's just, there was like a lot of shit like that. A lot of shit that's just, I don't know. And I went on to Internet Movie Database to just, so we wouldn't be flying blind. Like last week when we did Batman Begins, we didn't even know who fucking was in it. We just knew we hated Katie Holmes, but we didn't know really who played Batman. So this week I went to Internet Movie Database and printed out the crash page.
Wait a second, was he Jake Flanagan?
Jake Flanagan.
Get me Flanagan.
What? Where do you even see Jake Flanagan?
The bottom. William Fichtner.
No, that doesn't sound. That doesn't sound. That doesn't sound familiar either.
All right.
So, but anyway, in the Internet Movie Database, they have the you know, you can vote. You can vote for your 1 to 10 stars. You can vote for these movies. And I see it's got 8.5 stars out of 10. That's with just over 28,000 votes.
Well, you know, when reviewing movies, you've really got to be careful as to whether you're reviewing them to pick them apart and just try and find everything wrong with them, or if there is really something wrong with them.
Do you think that's what we're doing? Just trying to find something wrong with it?
I try to watch it. I try to watch myself, but I just think this movie is just as we said. Not that good.
I would agree. I didn't really enjoy it. And that's the other thing. It wasn't. I hate seeing movies that you don't get some sort of enjoyment out of. There's just. I just want. You know what I mean? Real life and real world events are so fucking much of a downer. You know, that shit's being pulled over our eyes and people are lying and people are getting away with everything. And when I see a movie, I want to be fucking entertained. I want to be whisked away from, you know, this crappy world.
I hear that.
And then but that's not going to, you know, stop me from seeing Syriana, which I think is probably,
Could be good.
But, I mean, this one, Oprah took a whole fucking hour, you know?
Oprah's judgment is questionable at times.
I have to agree with you on Oprah's judgment, because she loves the John Travolta and the Tom Cruise.
Yeah, she's starstruck and she doesn't realize it.
Is it? I mean, you know, I don't know. I don't know what her deal is with them. I really don't. But she really seemed to like this movie. And
maybe she's our secret Scientologist.
No, you know why I don't think she's a secret Scientologist? Because she talks about God and Jesus a lot.
Oh, secret, though.
No. She talks about God and Jesus and, like, she gets weepy when she starts talking about them. So I never hear her talk about
I don't mean
the
to knock
Xenu.
Oprah. No one's knocking Oprah.
No, because
don't knock the Oprah.
Oprah got us. We both read A Million Tiny Pieces.
True.
Because of the Oprah show.
Yeah.
And that was a great movie. And they're making a movie out of that.
Great book, you mean?
That was a great book. They're making a movie out of that.
Mm-hmm.
Who do you think should play the James Fry character? Don't say Matt Dillon. He's too old anyway. It's got to be somebody who's like 23 or 24. Or can play that.
Judge Reinhold?
Judge Reinhold!
Sorry.
Yeah, Judge Reinhold. He can play 23 or 24.
All right, Ralph Macchio.
Ralph Macchio can play any age because the guy will just, him and Robbie Benson have some sort of genetic thing where they just don't age.
No, but seriously, who could play him? I don't know. Let's see.
James Fry, addict, 23-year-old, angry. Who could play that? It's hard, isn't it?
Yeah, all the ones I can think of are too old. I'm not in touch with the youth culture over here.
Yeah, I really am not either. We didn't even know who Christian Bale was.
True. Who is he?
He was the guy who played Batman.
And a Batman Begins.
Exactly. Oh, shit, that's funny. So, how about the soundtrack?
What do you think? I didn't like it at all.
You didn't like not the soundtrack, the score. You didn't?
Nah, didn't love the score. Kept fucking bugging me out.
Oh, really? Why?
It was all like, I don't know. It was trying to be all heavy and eerie, and it just annoyed me.
Okay, so your favorite part of the movie was the most ridiculous part, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I like the... I guess the best part for me was any scene with Ludacris.
He was pretty funny.
He was good. Even though even the shit he had to read wasn't that good, he was good. I thought he was good.
He was pretty good, wasn't he?
So I would say he was the most surprising in terms of how good he was.
And who was the most surprising in how shitty they were?
Well, Brendan Fraser's always shitty, so that was no surprise.
It says on the Internet Movie Database that John Cusack was originally the choice for that role.
Yeah, he would have been better. Brendan Fraser's a fucking fluff.
You think so?
Yeah, he's a joke. You can't take him seriously. Who takes him seriously? What kind of person would take him seriously?
He's been in some good stuff, like The Mummy and stuff.
Yeah, The Mummy. That's like he should have been in Batman Begins. the worst part, he's pretty bad.
Brendan Fraser, you think, is the worst part of this movie?
No. I don't think any of the actors or actresses were the worst part of this movie.
You just think the movie was the worst part?
I think the the screenplay and or the general content was the worst part.
So you're going to blame this movie squarely on Paul Haggis?
Yeah, I mean, I don't, you know, it wasn't as heavy as they were trying to make it out to be. It's just like, no, it's not, life is not that simple.
And I just think when you want to show the world something heavy, I think it needs to be more subtle. I don't know, that's just my feeling. The best part of the movie for me was Sandra Bullock. I thought she did a fucking great job.
Yeah, I guess she was really good because I didn't like her at all.
Yeah. She was really good. Not only was she really good and she made you not like her, but in her moment where they, you know, where they take everybody and the ones that you don't like and then they make you like them because there's like a touching moment or something.
Right.
That actually made me cry when she hugged her Spanish housekeeper and said, "You're the best friend I have," after she had treated this woman fairly shittily prior to that. You know?
She was a very needy person.
Yeah, well, but she was married to Brendan Fraser. But, yeah, every character, they try to make you flip-flop on them. They say, you know, and it's true. Things aren't black and white. You don't just hate somebody or like them.
Who was the, who played Ludacris's friend?
I have no idea.
He was good.
Yeah, the acting in this movie, that's the thing. That's why it's the best, worst movie you've ever seen. Because all the acting is fine.
True.
It's the message. It's really just the message and there's just too much unbelievable crap that happens. And the fact that the Puerto Rican locksmith doesn't call the cops on Fahad, the Persian deli guy. Was it a deli?
I'm surprised. Yeah. I don't know what it was.
I don't know what it was.
It was a knick-knack shop.
Oh, knick-knack.
Weirdo Persian mom and pop shop. Prop shop.
Prop shop.
Persian mom and pop prop shop.
It just, that was just ridiculous. And there was just a lot of a lot of stuff that just didn't make sense.
Hey, but at the end, Ludacris lets the Chinaman go. He lets the Chinese people go, so he's a good guy too.
Those they're not Chinese. I think they were Thai or something.
Ah, Thai. Well, there you go.
I mean, he does a good thing.
Yeah, but that's just, you know, one more line in the line of absurdity.
It's all absurd.
I almost expect this thing to air like at 4:15 a.m., you know, on Channel 11 in the 1980s, and it's sponsored by the Christian, you know, network. It's like, this movie should have been on for 15 minutes, cap it down to 15 minutes, and sponsor it by the Christian right at whatever that was putting those shows on. If you... anyone out there knows what I'm talking about.
Well, remember the commercial with the little kid fishing with his grandfather, and he goes, "Jimmy says I'm a racist," and the grandfather says, "Who's Jimmy?" And the kid goes, "Jimmy's my Jewish friend."
Yes.
I mean, in that 20 seconds.
That was good.
But that's the thing. In that 20 second commercial, you got the point. Here's a 2 hour movie, or an hour and a half, or whatever. And it's the same point.
I'm telling you, you put that commercial with the Indian crying in the trash, and I think you got a hit more than this is a hit.
The Indian crying in the crash is very... it's like
trash.
In the trash.
He would be crying in the crash because it was offending him.
It, well, yeah.
Offending his intelligence.
No American Indians. The worst racism ever in the history of this fucking country, you know? 20 million Indians living on this country in 1492 and before... and Columbus comes and enslaves them. Pilgrims come, kill them. It's just like, you know, can you give a little American Indian love here, Native Americans? I mean, Christ.
Yeah.
But it was blacks, Persians, Chinese, Thai, and Puerto Ricans, right?
Sounds right.
And I think that was all. Those were the races that they covered. But I do think a Native American should have been in there.
It wouldn't have hurt.
Yeah, with the hi, how are you? All right. Well, I think I have no idea how long the show is because you've touched this.
Our track increment is fucked up, and we could be 50 minutes. We could be 35 minutes. Who knows what we are?
We could be 18 minutes. I have no idea what's going on here.
Here, wait, this might help.
No, don't, because it might blow up.
Gotcha.
All right, so we're not sure how long the show was, but we hope you liked it. This was episode 2.
This was episode 2. It is true.
Keep...
who knew?
Our website is daveandshecky.podomatic.com. We really encourage you to go on there and leave a comment and let us know. Let us know what you think of our review, if you agree or disagree, and we'll surely read your comments on the next show. Also, if you have a show that you have the TV Guide, that new crappy version of the TV Guide, if you have that and there's a movie in there that's interesting to you, let us know and maybe we'll review it. We're pretty open as to what we'll review.
Yes. What is the frequency, Kenneth?
Why, what made you say that?
I don't know. It's sort of like a send-off or something.
You want that to be the end of our show? Like your mom's box?
Well, let's not use that.
Well, no.
Because we are the... no one can fire us.
No one can fire
They're
us.
They're not firing us because we are them. We are them and they are we. We are all together. Woo-hoo.
The Your Mom's Box reference, of course, is to Opie and Anthony, the last words they said on their show when they were fired from NEW. And it's kind of become a thing now. If you're about to get fired and you know it, your mom's box.
Who said the what's the frequency, Kenneth?
Didn't somebody go up to like Dan Rather or Mike Wallace or something and just like they grabbed him and like they mugged him or something?
It was Mike Wallace. Or Dan Rather.
It was one of those CBS 60 Minute guys, I think. And they just grabbed him and they were just asking, what's the frequency, Kenneth? And didn't REM made a song, I think, about it.
That's quite amusing.
I'd love to know what the fuck they were talking about.
Yeah, I don't know.
Oh, what if there's like some deep conspiracy thing there? And it actually does mean something.
Who knows?
Who knows? All right. So that's it for episode 2 of Dave and Shecky's Groovy Boob Tube Review. And I'm Shecky saying goodbye, and...
I'm Dave saying goodbye.
See you next week.